technology is fighting us today. What I'm really enjoying about this session is the inclusion of communities and civilians as well as veterans in the discussions of the impacts of war on people. Our next presenter is Dr. Miranda Werthen. Dr. Werthen is an assistant professor in the Department of Health Science and Recreation at San Jose State University. She received her PhD in epidemiology from UC Berkeley and a master's in philosophy in international development from Oxford. Her work is interdisciplinary with a focus on marginalized and war-affected populations.
Thank you. So I realize my choice of color scheme may not have been so great for this format, so I'm sorry. I apologize in advance if you have difficulty reading my slides. I have no declarations of any personal financial relationships to disclose. So over the past few years, we've seen headlines about terrible acts of violence perpetrated by military service members and veterans. Some of these are cases of domestic violence. Others are violence perpetrated against strangers. We have mass killings that have grabbed headlines, whether they're committed in the United States or in the war zone. And the media have tried to make sense of these killings, attributing them to service members' problems with anger or PTSD or trauma. And when the media tries to make sense of these recent studies that have examined the prevalence and problems with violence, the articles are inevitably accompanied by a photo of a young service member or soldier with a gun who went on to commit some terrible murder. Of course, the military knows just how to interpret these studies. Warning, veterans are dangerous, crazy criminals. So what is the situation? Should we be scared? Are veterans really all that dangerous? And what can we do about it? So the literature with Vietnam veterans was conducted often decades after the war ended and the traumatic exposures had already happened. And obviously these were accompanied by the experiences of veterans coming back to a society that was rejecting of their service and what they had gone through. However, the findings were mixed about whether post-traumatic stress disorder or combat itself was what was to blame for some of these veterans' problems with anger. In current service members, there have been two main cohorts of soldiers and service members that have started to look at this in current era service members, so those who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan. One is actually a team out of the UK led by Deirdre McManus, and they found the prevalence of violence in the weeks after returning from Iraq was about 13%. However, when they linked these records to the actual records for the UK police services, which they were able to do because they're in the UK, they found that overall service members had lower rates of criminal arrest than the general population. However, that wasn't the case for the youngest generation of service members. In the U.S., about 33% of veterans have had self-reported problems with anger or aggression in the past year. 11% in total reported engaging in actually quite severe violence, so this question only assessed using a weapon or a gun on somebody or burning someone, choking someone, so extreme kinds of violence. However, this is, again, not necessarily a representative sample of all service members or all veterans. So here is a list of some of the known risk factors and also some of the protective factors around anger problems and problems with violence. And what I'd like you to notice here is that most of these factors are not uniquely military experiences. Almost all of them, in fact, are things that you can see in the general population as well. Combat, obviously, is not something that the general population tends to experience. So in my study, I used a nationally representative sample of Reserve and National Guard service members. So these are actually current service members, not veterans. And it's a longitudinal study, but I used data from just the second wave. And the aims of the study were to look at the prevalence of problems controlling violent behavior among current service members, to examine these characteristics, the prevalence by demographic characteristics and military characteristics, and then to look at the association between post-traumatic stress disorder and violent behavior. And I had a unique opportunity in these data to look at that for civilian traumas and then separately for deployment-related traumas. So this was a population that had that also had experienced civilian trauma, and so I could assess those separately. The key constructs, that was a simple self-report question that's been used in a number of different studies with military populations and has actually been shown in these other studies to correlate quite strongly with outside reports of violence. And then we used questions from the PTSD checklist to look at PTSD symptoms, including diagnosing with PTSD and then looking at PTSD symptom severity. And as I said, we had separate measures for civilian-related traumas and for deployment-related traumas, so individuals in the study could have two different PTSD scores. So here are some of the results that we found. So self-reported problems with violence are actually very uncommon in this population. The farthest, the percentage is probably what you should be looking at here on these slides coming forward. The problems were most common among the 25 to 34-year-old group and enlisted compared to officers. And this is actually a little different from what has been seen in other populations where there's generally been a direct dose-response relationship with age and youth, and here that wasn't the case. Education was most common among those with the least amount of education. And problems with violence were most common among those who deployed and experienced trauma, but actually those that deployed and did not experience trauma were the least likely to report problems with anger. So this suggests that deployment without trauma might confer some sort of positive benefits, like a sense of accomplishment or competence, things like that. When we look at PTSD, problems with violence were much more common among reservists stemming from either civilian or deployment-related trauma, or from both kinds of traumas. It is important to note that there was actually almost no difference in the prevalence of violence among those who had PTSD stemming from civilian-related traumas and those who had PTSD stemming from deployment-related traumas. When you get that double dose of PTSD, though, things are clearly quite different. These are adjusted prevalence ratios, taking into consideration most of the demographic factors that I just showed you. And you can see, again, there seems to be a higher relationship between deployment-related PTSD and violence than among civilian-related, but the confidence intervals are overlapping, so there's no actual statistical difference between these effects. So in conclusion, problems with violence are very uncommon among this group of reserve and service members. However, those with the double burden of PTSD, either from civilian deployment or from both, do definitely have more problems with violence than those without such histories. So while individual stories of this perpetration of violence are indeed horrific and tragic, they are fortunately uncommon. Factors that lead some people to join the military are also associated with violence in both military and non-military populations. So what we have here is a population of service members that is not representative already of the general population's experiences of protective factors, you could say. And PTSD and experiencing multiple traumas are associated with violence, but even among those with PTSD, violence is not the norm. Now, I have to be honest with you. When I was writing this presentation, after summarizing the literature, I grew discouraged about presenting my own findings. What is the point of these studies that we do when we just show again and again that trauma is bad for public health, poverty is bad for public health, and jobs are good? We know the things that hurt veterans: combat, trauma, PTSD, alcohol abuse. We also know the things that help veterans: jobs, housing, social support, family, friends, community members. Yet veterans' unemployment rate right now is double the national average for the youngest veterans, and that gap has been widening over the last decade. Over 60,000 veterans are homeless on any given night, and the number of young veterans who have unstable housing is increasing. So there are three things that I want you to take away from this presentation today. The first is that media portrayals of veterans as dangerous, violent criminals are just wrong. That there are indeed some horrific and tragic exceptions, but those are not the norm. And this should not lead us to stigmatize veterans or to determine that all people who join the military come out the other side far worse for their service. In fact, these kinds of myths make it harder for veterans to access the very kinds of supportive factors that we know protect them against committing violence in the future. If employers think that veterans are crazy and dangerous, they'll be far less likely to hire veterans, putting them in tremendous strain on both themselves and their families. If community members are worried about a veteran snapping, they won't treat a veteran neighbor with a welcome and care and compassion and just plain friendliness that we know makes a huge difference in veterans' experience transitioning home. So please think of this when you next engage with a service member in your community. The second thing I want you to remember is that the same things that make a veteran more likely to commit acts of violence are the things that make anyone more likely to commit acts of violence. This session is sponsored by the Peace Caucus, and I hope that all of you recognize that violence, whether in warfare or in families or at the bar, is a bad thing. Use your role in your community, whatever that role is, to try and increase access for all people to these supportive factors, and you will do a service in reducing violence. And finally, the third thing to remember is that combat is related to anger and violence, whether it's through PTSD or just in and of itself. And the only thing that we will ever be able to do to reduce combat is by reducing war and ending war. So I would encourage all of you, I don't think this will come as any surprise in the Peace Caucus, to do what you can to stop war. So thank you very much.